Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, welcome to Nature Now for the mid-January week when winter arrived. This is Mary Robson. I'm here with Alex Henley. We are certainly noticing winter and all kinds of things happening. Plants like snowdrops or narcissus that are already growing will hunker down under cold and snow. And for humans, I think icy roads can be the worst. And Alex will help with observations. Winter plant hardiness. The next three observations relate to the fact that we are in sub-freezing temperatures and plants have to adapt. You have certainly seen the rolled leaves on native and garden rhododendrons in response to cold. This is partly because if the ground freezes, roots cannot transport water. The leaves may then show edge damage. By rolling inward, the leaf reduces the exposed surface. Winter hardiness also depends on the length of establishment for plants and their general root health. Recent rains help condition the roots to manage freezing temperatures. And if you want to learn more about this, the PNW, Pacific Northwest Information from Oregon State Extension, produces a useful publication on winter plant hardiness. Lots of it. Frozen ponds and lakes. Birds and other ducks just migrate to the soil edge to wait for thaw. Obviously, this affects their ability to eat, and one of the things you wonder about is how long will that stay frozen? The migrations we see of swans arriving here for winter result from the deep and long-lasting frozen water in their summer breeding grounds. Seen in Port Townsend, five mature deer using the crosswalk on Washington Street. There is no sensible conclusion to draw from this.
The varied thrush has been seen at Union Bay in Seattle for most of the winter. The varied thrush, though it is familiar here, isn't primarily an urban bird, and it does visit Union Bay and the Washington Arboretum. They like berries of all sorts, and one photo shared on Twitter shows the fish hook shape of the tongue, which helps in swallowing the berries. Larry Hubble describes the ideal location for them as clear air, dappled shadows, cool floating mists, and silence. Very lyrical indeed.
Today, Anne Soule will join us to talk about water matters, but first, the mystery sound. Today we are going to be talking about the realities of water in the Pacific Northwest area, especially in Clallam County and by extension in Jefferson County. We're talking at a time when there's a great deal of water falling in the form of snow, which it affects what happens to it when it lands. So why don't you jump in and talk a little bit about water supply, weather, climate, how they work together.
Of course, snow is a very exciting thing for a hydrologist in the Northwest. We love it. And yeah, the snow that we're having right now is perfect. We really need it in the mountains, but we can use it everywhere because snow ends up as water that will recharge the ground and fill our soils and our water table and our aquifers. And then, of course, in the mountains, it accumulates and creates snowfields and adds to the glaciers some more annual growth for the glaciers if it stays cold up there.
Well, that's so, one of the realities about the mountain snow, isn't it? Sometimes in the spring we've had rather early melting and of that snow.
Right. I think it was this past year we had decent snowpack, but then it melted out early. Mm-hmm. And you know, when that happens, frankly, you might as well have not had it, because if it's going to melt early and not persist until the usual snow melt season, which is May, June, and into July, then your rivers will still suffer if you don't have that midsummer snowpack to continue to feed the rivers.
Given that that's something that a hydrologist can measure but not do anything about. I think it might lead to the fact that a lot of people have the perception that we are in the evergreen area where there's all the water anybody ever needs. That is one of the reasons that this region can be short of water, certainly through the summer.
Yeah, it's a different kind of a water shortage than what the rest of the world probably thinks of, because here we've got, yeah, we have rain. We have gray days and we have rainy days a lot. But what we also need, what our ecosystem has evolved with, is that snowmelt that feeds the rivers throughout Washington State and the Pacific Northwest all summer. If you don't get the snowpack in the winter in the mountains, you're not keeping the equilibrium like we've had it. And what's happening with climate change is less snow is accumulating in the mountains over time, and our glaciers are losing mass. So there just is, frankly, less water coming out of the mountains when, again, the rest of the ecosystem and biodiversity elements are expecting it.
One of the things about snow depth and the data on it, what we thought might have been true last week is probably not true this week because of the current snow. I was wondering if there has been, at this point, say up until this week, an estimation of what depth of snow we've had and how that relates to the ideal.
Yes, the amount of snow, there's a few stations in the Olympic Mountains that record snow depth, and they also record something called snow water equivalent. That's a translation of snow depth based on its weight and density, and tells you really that's the number you can plan with, you know, predict mm-hmm. into the future with. The snow depth, not so much, because you don't know if it's dense or loose.
You're looking for dense snow?
Yeah, well, you need the dense snow, you need the compact snow to make it into the summer without melting. It's not going to melt as fast if it's dense. Yeah, so as far as numbers, I did not check today. That would have been good, but I imagine that we are closer to normal, but we were way less than 50% overall of the normal amount of snow for this time of the winter, according to our stations.
One of the things that we did talk about was the rate of change on the glaciers, how many have disappeared altogether and or are in the process of disappearing. It really is the thing that has brought climate change forward to me faster than anything else.
Yeah, there's numbers that can really scare you in terms of, yes, there were something like 266 glaciers in 1982. There's about half of that now, you know, plus or minus 10. I mean, I'm sure that 266 included a lot of small ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking about half of our glaciers have disappeared. And 1982, it isn't that long ago.
No. And when we spoke before, I told you that I had, at the age of 78, I had expected that climate change would happen, but very much more slowly than it seems to be. I feel as if we're on a kind of galloping road that just keeps going faster and faster.
I don't know if people are using the term exponential rate of change, but certainly it is something like that. There's the rate of change is increasing, thing that we need to do everything we can to change that rate of change, to reduce it from being as quick as you're talking about.
Well, I was wondering if what you have studied in terms of the history of water management, certainly in the area served by the Dungeness River, how this affects what's happening presently. We were thinking about the emphasis on irrigation and agriculture that was one of the first parts of the way the Dungeness was settled. How does it affect what people now think? I always wonder how people change their minds or what they learn.
The Dungeness watershed is one of the more fascinating places I've ever heard of, and I don't think I'm necessarily biased. I have been working here my entire career, but so I guess there's some inherent bias. But between the Western, the European settlers that came and altered the hydrology radically by setting up this irrigation system that covers dozens of square miles, 100 square miles probably, refilling the aquifers in the season that they usually don't get any water, creating surface water in an environment that grows oak and cactus in the past,
right,
all of a sudden there's these canals and channels of water going everywhere, and creating this amazing bloom of agriculture in this area that was called a prairie and altering it hydrologically. Yeah, the history of those generations of settlers, the Western settlers, that whose families created that environment and then created the town of Squim and the economy based on farming, there has been a shift. And those irrigators are some of the most knowledgeable and contributing members of our community towards smart water management now, because they have had to pay attention to it. They've had the spotlight turned on them because they're the ones with the water rights. They're the ones using the vast majority of the water. And in some cases, the majority of the water in the river, they have agreed to not take more than half of the flow in the Dungeness during that critical time period in the late summer when the salmon and other, you know, environmental needs are there.
So, in effect, the history is now being spread across people who are still in agriculture but are concerned about change.
They're concerned about the water supply in the mountains as mm-hmm. well as, you know, which translates to the river. And there are management projects that are being proposed that they are helping promote because they know that their future is at stake as well, including that off-channel reservoir project you might have heard, which would be a brand new way of storing water that doesn't impact the river ecosystem, but does provide water for irrigation and aquifer recharge.
I have just heard the name. I don't know very much about who is supporting it, how will it be built, et cetera. What's the timing, do you know, on getting a reservoir for agriculture?
The reservoir, it's a Clallam County project, and they, as we speak, I believe, the county is sending a letter of intent to purchase the land for the reservoir to the State Department of Natural Resources, who owns this large parcel now. The county got a grant from the State Department of Ecology to assist with the cost of the land purchase and the final design. It's only been through preliminary design so far. So there's several years of design work before it could even be constructed or starting to be ready for getting the funding to construct it, because that will be many millions of dollars as well.
Well, what I was thinking about was that this change in perception of, yes, we are short of water in spite of the past. The idea is that there's a lot of water, but we haven't got good places to put it. A reservoir might help, but over the course of the time that it has to take to get built, the realities of what's happening in the valley of the Dungeness River go on. I was thinking about the other importance, because so many people are concerned about salmon, that it has always been the snow melt that kept the rivers cool, and that has a possibility of changing.
Yeah, well, without that cold snowmelt, you're right, the rivers aren't going to be as cold, and that will affect the health of the salmon. Groundwater is another source of cooler water, so the base flow that the rivers have in that late summer period is generally, when the snowmelt is gone, all they have left is the groundwater base flow, and that is generally cool. But when you don't have very much water and you've got a lot of rocks with a lot of sun on them, it heats up pretty fast.
I wanted to, just as we're coming to the end of our time here, if you could help describe a couple of ways that people who are interested in this but want to learn more can do it locally. I know that you write a regular blog, which is fun to read. There are a couple of other things happening. So let's say you're talking to me and I don't know much. How could I keep going on that?
So my blog is called The Water Column Site on WordPress. So that's a pretty easy way to find my articles. And I've been writing them monthly for almost 5 years now.
Wow.
And, covering all different kinds of topics related to water. It's called Water Matters. It was started in 2015. And then also there's a very interesting project which is being sponsored by the Clallam County League of Women Voters, which is called Story of Water. And I've been assisting on that project with a woman named Carol Hull. She was just motivated to educate herself, educate her league members. And then as a group, we decided, let's take this to the public. And we've got a wonderful film that was done and a lecture series that's underway dealing with all the technical and socio-political aspects of water and water supply in the Dungeness watershed. And they're always held at the Squim City Hall Council Chambers at 6:30 p.m. on a Wednesday. And
And there is a website.
The League Women Voters Clown County website. There's a page called Story of Water.
Okay. So that someone who wants to attend between now and June to pick up quite a number of these talks, it's open to the public?
Yes. And there's always question and answer period. And we always try to show the film, which is a 20-minute film that introduces the whole thing to the general viewer. It's also available on the website, but for anybody that wants to see it in a group setting, we show it at the end of the lecture as well.
Okay. It seems to me that this has the value of a continual course that lasts long enough so that people can take what they've learned in one section and apply it or carry it through to the next. Water law, for example, that is a huge subject all over the West.
Exactly.
Very, very difficult and vexing. You did mention earlier that an agriculturist might have a water right. Who legislates this now that some of the laws are so old?
It's the State Department of Ecology, which was called the Department of Conservation back when the water right, water law was first started. The water law goes back to 1917 when folks were starting to realize that, the biggest users, the biggest irrigators were taking water out of the river, and somebody who maybe realized that, hey, I was here first, I should have priority for that water. It became a big debate in the state legislature, and that's how we got our first water law just over 100 years ago.
Really appreciate having you here to share this with us, and I think this does get us started on a wider discussion of water laws and water realities in this area, so I'm really delighted. Thank you so much, Anne. I've appreciated this.
Oh, no worries. I enjoyed it, too. Thank you, Mary.
Okay. Bye-bye. The snowy owl. These stunning white and brown owls are occasionally seen on the Olympic Peninsula, though rarely, and when they do come, they draw a crowd. You will probably not hear their call, which is given during mating or when disturbed. They prefer open spaces for hunting and nesting, placing their nests on the tundra or the field. Thick feathers covering their legs and feet help cold survival. They have so many feathers they almost look round. Like many birds, including ravens, they can hear prey moving under snow. They eat lemmings, voles, and mice, but will take nearly any mammal they find. They are considered endangered, especially as their preferred Arctic landscape changes and melts. And to events. These are all related to birds. The Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society, on January 15th, which is Wednesday, has the Members Photo Night 2020. This is from 7 o'clock till 8:30. It is open to the public. Finally, the Dungeness River Audubon Center has a Focus On series, and in this week, the focus is on alcids, January 18th, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Dungeness River Audubon Center. Oh, thanks today for joining us on Nature Now. We've enjoyed bringing you this authentic and eclectic show. Thanks to Alex Henley for engineering. Nature Now is on Wednesdays at noon, repeats Thursdays at 5 p.m., and Saturdays at 12:30.
All day I face the barren waste without the taste of water, cool water. Old Dan and I with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water, cool, clear water. The nights are cool and I'm a fool, each star's a pool of water, cool water. And with the dawn I'll wake and yawn and carry on to water, cool, clear water. Keep a moving down.
you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spreads the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for you and me? Water. The shadows sway and seem to say, tonight we pray for water, cool water. And way up there he'll hear our prayer and show us where there's water, cool, clear. Moving, Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spreads the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for you and